Hello and welcome to another new signing podcast exclusively for you guys here on Patreon. As ever, I'm joined by Phil Costa. Hello, Phil.
Hey, Andrew. Nice to be back.
Good.
Nice to be back talking about another new arrival.
Of course. We've got to play the sound. Hang on. This time, the out-of-the-blue, unexpected arrival of Alexander Zinchenko from Manchester City. Nobody could see this one coming, etc., etc. £30 million deal for a 25-year-old with plenty of experience, but over whom I think there are probably some interesting discussion points based on where he's going to play, how he's played for Manchester City, where Arsenal might use him, etc., etc. But it does seem obvious that after the pursuit of Lisandro Martinez, I don't know if you say failed. I don't know if it failed as much as Manchester United paid way more than we were going to, so they just got him. So I don't know if you can categorize that as failure. But we turned our attention very quickly from Martinez to Zinchenko. I don't know if you could call them the same kind of player because they play in different positions, they have different experiences, etc., etc. But clearly there was a list that Arsenal had, and this is the next guy on the list. They've moved pretty quickly to fill the gap in the squad that they feel needs to be filled.
Yeah, totally. I mean, obviously, you know, Lisandro Martinez was the primary target that had kind of been filtering through, you know, various news reports and about, you know, there was a few Ornstein bombs about him and calling him the primary target. But absolutely, I just think that deal was getting to kind of ridiculous levels. And I think Ajax played that perfectly in how, you know, it was very Arsenal centric at first, the interest. And then as soon as Ten Hag, you know, obviously got United on the case, and it just kept going up by 5 million and then up by 5 million. And it was just like, this is a bit mad, you know, like it's going to like 68 million potentially, 68 million euros potentially with add-ons included, which for me, he's obviously, you know, a very talented player, quite a unique player in not only in terms of his physical profile playing at centre back, but in terms of what he can offer in terms of his distribution. But I just think that's a lot of money. And I think the way in which, you know, Arteta, Edu, the club have kind of, yeah, like you said, just walked away from it, accepted that, you know, it wasn't to be with Lisandro and said, look, we're going to have to head down the list. And we've certainly got, you know, he wasn't the primary target, I'm very happy with the player and how quickly we've acted to bring him in.
We are bringing in another player with Premier League experience as well. You know, the big signing this summer, of course, is Gabriel Jesus, also from Manchester City. But he's Premier League ready, oven ready, as they say, in the actual sense, because he doesn't need to adapt. He knows the league, he knows the players, he knows how physical it is. And similarly, you could say the same, obviously, of Alexander Zinchenko, who's been at Manchester City for 5 years now. But can we do a little bit of background on where he came from and where he started his career?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, it's quite funny because Ukrainian football has kind of become a hotbed for Brazilian talent, particularly with Shakhtar Donetsk and their manager, well, their old manager, Michail Lucescu. He kind of became the intelligent guy to think, there's a lot of talent in Brazil. How about we give them a pathway to come to Europe? And, you know, they'd signed a lot of players, you know, such as Fernandinho, Fred, obviously Henrik Mkhitaryan's not Brazilian, but he went there and he kind of figured out that if we can create a little community here, we can use that as our USP to attract some Brazilian talent. But Zinchenko was kind of picked up through their sort of home academy, the one in Ukraine, where they weren't looking abroad. And he was kind of excelling as one of the best Ukrainian talents coming through in his youth. And he was actually a number 10 coming through as a youth talent. He used to play for Shakhtar Donetsk in Ukraine as a number 10 creative player, kind of like Martin Odegaard style. You know, very much about the assist, very much about the pre-assist, not much of a goal scorer. But it was clear very on that he was very technically gifted, very technically accomplished. And what I've also broken down in the in the piece that's going to go up after he signed, the profile piece, is that he kind of was brought into City as a kind of part of their talent churn, which is, you know, what happens is they acquire clubs through their City Football Group system. And then all around the world, they just pick up talents who won't cost the earth, but have sort of made a name for themselves between, I don't know, 2 million and 10 million. And they say, right, if we put the investment down, we're not going to end up losing anything because it's a small investment on our side. And if they go on to do good things, then, you know, amazing. And he was signed by City for that kind of reason. You know, he'd been making a name for himself in Russia. He actually left Shakhtar Donetsk because of the ongoing conflict in Donbass. And he was picked up by a small Russian side called FC Ufa. And Manchester City signed him for just under £2 million, which, you know, looking back now is a pretty incredible piece of business. Mm. Because after spending one season on loan at PSV, he spent the next 5 years at Man City. So nobody really expected him to go on and be such a fixture in their first team, but absolutely fair play. He's, you know, obviously it's very easy to be outcrowded and overshadowed in Manchester City's midfield because of, you know, the incredible talent that they have there and depth, but he's managed to carve out that left-back position for his own. He's made it his own with a few unique technical qualities, his distribution. And yeah, so nobody really expected him to kind of kick on and be this kind of permanent first team fixture, but he's done it. And the general consensus at Man City is that, you know, there was a sort of acceptance that it was his time to go and sort of sow his oats elsewhere. But in terms of the return that they got, they're all extremely happy with him. And he was a really good influence behind the scenes as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's quite interesting to consider the, you know, the fact that when you come to Manchester City and you are nominally, or you've started your career as a number 10, you want to play in midfield, but there are players like David Silva, Bernardo Silva, Kevin De Bruyne and countless others who can play in those positions for Manchester City. It's not as if they have any issues with depth there. So if you want to make a breakthrough, sometimes you have to be reconfigured, I think might be the right way of putting it, because when Mikel Arteta spoke about him, he said he was a natural number 10 earlier in his career and we converted him into a left back who can do a lot of things that we want in our way of playing. And he was obviously talking about his time at Manchester City. And I think, you know, we think fullback and we can list off any kind of any number of conventional fullbacks in our own minds. But when you're playing fullback for a Pep Guardiola team, it is not quite that, is it? It's not conventional. It's not necessarily traditional. I mean, you think about what he did with Philipp Lahm at Bayern Munich when he came there, and Lahm was a great right back and moved him into central midfield. He does things with players from fullback positions, either moving them in or out of those positions, which really have an impact on his team. And I think, you know, he's obviously not been first choice playing week in, week out, every single game. He's not been absolutely critical, but in the Guardiola team and the Guardiola system, he's got a very, very specific role, a specific job to do. And that, I think, he can only do probably because of his quality, because of his technical ability from being a number 10 and being a midfield player.
Totally. It's a very ambitious and unique system that we've kind of come to expect now with Guardiola and Manchester City. And the fact that, essentially, apart from their two centre halves, that occasionally turns into a three with Rodri, you know, dropping in between both centre backs, that everybody else is essentially a midfielder or forward. And the whole point of this kind of 2-3-5 formation is to give yourselves as much dominance and territorial control on the pitch as possible, because you just shut off every exit lane, every passing lane possible. Mm. And how many times have we, you know, watch City, even against Arsenal, and we can't get out. There's just no way out. And I think Tim Stillman in particular has referenced how boring Man City are to watch, because they just suffocate teams. It's like a cat, you know, when maybe not a domestic cat, but in the jungle when they go for the jugular, and you just see them biting on the neck to try and suffocate that oxygen supply. And that's essentially what Man City do. They just keep teams penned in. They exhaust them, you know, with the interchanges between the left side and the right side, and, you know, the rotation at centre forward, which we've obviously come to know through Gabriel Jesus, and we've scouted Gabriel Jesus about that. And it's just a mental tirade, should we say, for the opposition. And I think someone like Zinchenko, yes, on the team sheet, he's playing as a left back, but if you watch him play for City, he's just central more often than not. And I think that's a really interesting angle for this transfer, because I think, as you mentioned, Kieran Tierney, Nuno Tavares are maybe more traditional left backs. I know Nuno Tavares is kind of more offensively minded, but, you know, they're more traditional left backs in the sense of how we've come to expect them. But Zinchenko is very much comfortable on the ball. He's very much deep progression. He's very much coming in to sort of form those triangles in the left half space. He can do the long diagonals. He can do the little combination plays. You know, this is a really accomplished, technical, intelligent footballer that we've signed. And I think it's interesting because it opens so many opportunities for how we can play not only with him, but also as a team. Whether he's kind of playing that inverted role that he plays at Man City, or whether he's going to be trusted with moving into that left eight position, which I think he's more than capable of doing, having watched him for Ukraine and also for City on occasion. And I think it's a really exciting one because, as you said, Lisandro Martinez is slightly different in, maybe not in their terms of a distribution, but Lisandro Martinez could not slot into that eight position and play it seamlessly. But I've got absolutely no issue with Zinchenko doing it. And I think that's a really exciting thing for the team, for the side.
Sure. So looking at his strengths then, are they primarily on the ball and facing forward?
Absolutely, I would say so. I mean, I've just looking here, the stats are quite incredible. And I think a lot of the kind of the stats guys have been waxing lyrical about Zinchenko because he's no ordinary left back. I mean, obviously everyone's been on, you know, Who Scored and FB Ref, but among, you know, positional peers, so it analyzes him against other left backs and right backs, he's in the 99th percentile for pass completion, progressive passes and assists. Wow. Which doesn't strike you as, you know, traditional left back stats, should we say. That's not often the metrics that left backs are assessed on and judged on. It's usually, you know, tackling completion rates and interceptions and aerial ability. But this is, you know, he's really, you know, it's very easy to go overboard, but he's a really impressive technician and distributor. And actually, in my opinion, that's even improved at Man City. It's gone up a level because, as we mentioned, he was a kind of number eight looking to unlock those stern defenses moving forward. But I've been so impressed in how his position and his role has been used to break lines. He's very adept at, obviously, in the company that he's in with Ilkay Gundogan, Kevin De Bruyne, Bernardo Silva, they're naturally very good at being able to find space and being able to receive the ball on the half turn. But they can do that as much as they like. They still have to get the ball. And Zinchenko, for me, is such an impressive kind of passer between the lines. He's very good at knowing where to stand, when to vacate that space made. You know, let's say Ilkay Gundogan's gone for a run into the box. He's very adept at just drifting in, acting as, you know, filling in that space. And I just find him a really impressive, intelligent operator as well, not only for his work in kind of building play in a deep position, you know, a facilitative sense, but also when he gets into the final third, I love that he can sort of take a deep breath and look for the options. Because I think with Nuno Tavares and, you know, Kieran Tierney, we've seen them do it, but I think there are also occasions where they're kind of looking for areas as opposed to people.
Sure.
And I think with Zinchenko, particularly with Gabriel Jesus, there's been a history of him picking players out, and I think that's a welcome trait for us.
So I've seen plenty of discussion, you know, for all his technical quality, for what he can give a team going forward, and we'll come back to that because I do think it's an aspect just to touch on it in a moment, the defensive side of his game. And look, he is a midfielder. We know that. He is being asked to do a job at left back. There are some concerns about his defensive stats, defensive numbers. And I'm just curious as to how you read that based on what we've already got at left back. And I think last season when Kieran Tierney was fit, there was maybe a perception that he wasn't quite the same Kieran Tierney that we saw when he first arrived, in that maybe there wasn't quite as much going forward. But I think defensively, when you think back on last season when he was around, he was really, really solid. Nobody was getting past Kieran Tierney. Very few people dribbled beyond him. Very few chances came down that side when he was playing. Nuno Tavares, something different, of course, less assured, less accomplished defensively. His strength, of course, is in the opposition half. So when you think about how Mikel Arteta wants to set his teams up, how much of an issue do you think it might be that maybe Zinchenko's weakness, if you like, is in the defensive final third with perhaps opposition players going at him?
Yeah, I mean, we spoke about him not being a traditional left back, and I think that shows in his defensive work. For me, the issue is more of an issue of technique as opposed to intent. I think he's a very kind of hardworking player. He's a very, as well, we have to consider that Manchester City are very all or nothing in their press. They like to be on players quickly. They like to squeeze space. And more often than not, that kind of swarm tactic works.
Yeah.
Right. Guardiola was the famous, you know, if I don't have the ball back in 6 seconds kind of thing. It's, you know, he was very intent on winning the ball back early, quickly, not giving teams a chance to get out or maybe find some space in behind a high line. And, you know, with that system, you need defenders who are capable of defending in space. And I think, you know, you go through those options, Aymeric Laporte, Ruben Diaz, very comfortable defending in space. Kyle Walker, extremely quick, extremely strong, comfortable in space. Zinchenko, not so much, unfortunately. I think in terms of his raw athletic capacity, he's much more kind of Erdegaard-y and deceptive in those quick movements over 5 yards, maybe, in terms of how he can escape the press and little body swivels and turns that can maybe escape pressure. But I think if it was, you know, chasing a 25-yard, 30-yard ball over the top, I'd be a little bit concerned if he was alone. I think he's got a really bad habit of lunging in on halfway, because he knows that he doesn't trust himself or his body to maybe compete with quicker, more direct wingers. And I think that's a very dangerous tactic and approach. And we've seen it before in the past with Granit Xhaka. Like, he just dangles a leg out and it's infuriating because you're just screaming at the TV saying, just jockey him, just keep him there. You don't need to dive in and commit yourself, because as soon as you do that, the whole structure of the team goes, and it's just kind of chaos, alarm bells from there. But interestingly, I did some digging, and only two more players made more successful tackles than Zinchenko at Euro 2020. So that shows that he can do the defensive work, and maybe in central midfield, he's more, how should we say, there's more of a security blanket behind him, as opposed to left back. He might feel a bit more stressed, a bit more direct, you know, when wingers are facing him up directly, as opposed to midfield. Sure. You've got other players behind you. Yeah, for me, the issue is more of one of technique. I just think his body position is not very conventional. I think he's prone to getting himself stuck in some knots. And yeah, the lunging in thing for me was a bit of a red flag, having gone through the footage. But I think in how we will use him and how we have capable defenders in Ben White, Gabriel, even William Saliba now coming back, who can hold their own, should we say. They're not scared to go wide and follow people. They're big guys, they're strong guys, they're quick guys. And I think, look, there will be the occasional defensive hiccup, but I think in terms of what Arteta wants from him, how he will be used in our team and our setup. I think we're kind of looking at the positives that he'll bring in terms of possession, territory, control, distribution from deep, and we're kind of taking those positives with the negatives that unfortunately he's not very used to defensively.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that what Arteta is trying to do, and Tim wrote about this on the side in his column this week as well, you know, is obviously raise the technical level of the team from front to back. And in doing so, you perhaps offset some of the weaknesses that a player might have. So if you've got a guy, let's say you've got a dodgy fullback, you know, think of one in your head, and you've got a winger running at him 7, 8, 9, 10 times in a game, chances are that guy's going to get roasted at least once, mm-hmm. and it's going to cost you. Whereas if you have greater control, greater dominance of the game, greater technical security, you're better in possession in the opposition half, maybe you're pressing better, maybe you're pressing higher up the pitch. And we talked about this in one of the previous podcasts. It could have been Fabio Vieira, where we're talking, and maybe Gabriel Jesus as well, where their presence in the team and these kinds of players change how you play the game and where you play the game. So you're not necessarily as weak as you might be, you know, the whole, you know, you're only as a chain is as strong as its weakest link, et cetera, et cetera. But if the game is being played more and more in the opposition half, those weaknesses that, you know, a player defensively, I don't want to say defensively suspect, a player who's not as strong defensively as he is the other way, mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily become as big a problem as if you're playing in a way where every time you get the ball, you're giving it away and you're being exposed and you're being pressured again and again and again.
Completely. And I think you've kind of nailed it there, because like you said, individually, Zinchenko may not be the best defender. You know, he's not going to be Paolo Maldini. But how City play, they've got two defenders primarily who are very strong, quick, capable in space, but also Kyle Walker on the other side, which could make it, Tomiyasu maybe doesn't have that natural speed of Kyle Walker, but it can kind of be that system where one comes in, one drops back to maybe make a three. Tomiyasu's a lot more defensively inclined, a lot more capable. So it gives us more options tactically, systemically, and also the technical security aspect should not be overlooked. I think even Kieran Tierney, as much as we like him, there's a tendency for him to kind of panic on the ball a bit, and he'll just boot it, you know, up the pitch. Let's say he's being pressured or in a corner or something. And I think Zinchenko is very adept at retaining possession, recovering possession, making those little triangles. It was something I noticed actually when having gone through the video. There was, you know, let's say a left midfielder or a right midfielder, sorry, or a central midfielder is coming to press him. And naturally, in a corner by the touchline, your options are slim, you know. And but he always managed to find a pass. He always managed to get some quick footwork in there to retain possession. And actually, I did some digging in some stats, and he was in the 97th percentile for passes completed under pressure.
Right.
So I just think that gives Arsenal an added layer of maybe whether it's them escaping pressure. You know, we remember that goal against Man City in the FA Cup semi-final, or the goal against Southampton last season where we'd kind of worked it from Ramsdale, then it went to Ben White, and then to Tomiyasu, and then to Granit Xhaka. And then we kind of worked our way around. And I think that's a huge bonus for this side, because too often last season, you know, as well as he did, the fact that we were relying on Rob Holding to come in and close games was simply because we had a shortfall of technical quality in the side, you know, and composure. And I think having players like Zinchenko, who obviously is used to dominating with Manchester City, but also when we need to escape some pressure, when we need to get our foot on the ball and you know, feel comfortable in actually giving players possession. Because I felt at times last season, there were times when, you know, maybe they looked away from Nuno Tavares because of his kind of erraticness. Is that a word? Erraticness, yeah. In possession on occasion. But I don't think Granit Xhaka is going to be looking out to his left and thinking, oh God, Zinchenko's there. I think there's going to be a confidence in his technical ability, not only from the manager, but also from his teammates as well. And I think that's a huge plus.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really part of it as well, is you're bringing in players who know how to play that way. You can say, you know, I want to play with more possession, with more control. But if you have to spend 6 months teaching people, that makes it a little more difficult, where we've brought in two players in Jesus and Zinchenko who are drilled like that on the training ground and in games and have been for the last 5 years. And I think that's a really interesting aspect of you know, what these guys are going to bring to the team. The midfield left back discussion, you know, there are times he's going to play at left back. There are going to be times maybe where he's going to play in midfield. Do you worry at all about a player's ability to do both as well as each other? I mean, he may well be a better midfielder than he is a left back, but we might need him at left back more than we need him in midfield, if that makes sense.
I think so. I think that will be the case. I assume Nuno Tavares will go on loan. There's been strong interest from Marseille and actually more recently Brighton, which I would really like, because I think it's Graham Potter's an excellent manager. And there's a potential window for Nuno to get first team football, particularly if Cucurella goes to Man City. But for me, I think he'll primarily be there as kind of left back cover / competition. But I think if we see him in midfield, I think his quality will really surprise people, particularly in the Euros last year. And there were a few World Cup qualifiers this year against Scotland and Wales. I mean, that first 45 minutes against Scotland, he ran the show.
Yeah.
He was running the game, and that was in midfield as the number eight. And I think he has a lot of quality and ability to be more influential than Granit Xhaka, particularly in an offensive sense. I think Granit Xhaka has you know, done what's been asked of him to Granit Xhaka consistency. But in terms of his play in the final third, I just think he lacks a bit of finesse, a bit of creativity. But for Ukraine, he's often the creative spark for them. And I think as a footballer, if we see him in midfield, he'll really surprise people. I think he's got a lovely feel for the ball. He can sort of glide across the ground, and he's got those little bits of footwork to escape pressure. He's got the no-touch turns to escape pressure. And I think people have, you know, instead of it being something to maybe think, oh, I'm not sure where his best position is going to be, I just think we should enjoy having the possibility of both.
Sure.
Particularly if, you know, we don't know if another midfielder is going to come in the future and in the rest of the transfer window. I think there's still an argument to be made for that. But I think if they're, you know, if we were going into the season with Zinchenko and the options as they are now, I'm very comfortable with that. And I think he's an underrated footballer that was maybe overshadowed by just the sheer depth and ability in that Manchester City midfield.
I was just going to say as well that, like, I think there are certain players who will go to a big club like Man City and accept a role of, you know, second string or whatever it might be. But I think when you look at the arc of his career, and you mentioned, you know, having to leave the club because of the conflict in Donbass and what's going on in Ukraine now, and being at Manchester City with that array of talent. And I watched the video as well. I mean, this is separate from this, where I think it could have been Kyle Walker talking about who are the most technically gifted players at Manchester City. And he one of the first players he mentioned was Zinchenko. And when you look at who they've got and who they've had during his time there, that tells you something about that level. But I think there's a character there that I think Mikel Arteta will appreciate. He spoke very well about what's happened in Ukraine and what's going on in Ukraine at the moment. And I think the strength of character you need to represent your country while it's under attack from essentially a monster, to perform at that level, to do it week in, week out in the Premier League, to make your place at a club like Man City anyway, all of those things I think are important things from when you're taking sort of holistic view of a player, not just his technical quality, not where he can play, but what does he bring beyond that to the group? And I think that's part of why he was high up the list this year.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously the fact that Arteta, like Gabriel Jesus, has worked with the player, I think there's a natural kind of chemistry and link before you've even started negotiations, which I think is a huge help. But also, having read about him, having watched him, there is a strong sense of selflessness in what he does, and adaptability, which I think are two key figures in what Arteta, much like Guardiola, wants in his team. And I think we've kind of signed him at the perfect time where, you know, he's done his time at City. He's won, you know, he's won a lot there. He's been part of a really successful kind of regime under Pep Guardiola. He's played with some excellent players. But I think at 25, at, you know, he's learned about the Premier League. And I think it's time for him to kind of step out of that shadow a bit, if that makes sense. I think it's time for him to move elsewhere and kind of take a really prominent role, not only as a technical leader, but also one in the changing room. You mentioned there how he kind of became the voice for Ukrainians in a sporting sense about what was happening. And, you know, I just think it's the right time for him. He's done his time. He's learned about the Premier League. He's plied his trade. He's won trophies. But now he can sort of finish that chapter off, shall we say, and really step on in his career. And I think there's a lot of parallels between this move and the Gabriel Jesus move, because, you know, it's time.
Yeah.
It's time for him. And I think he can offer Arsenal a lot with Arteta, with our journey. And I just think it's about floor raising. And how do you become a better team? You sign better players. It's quite that simple. And I think it's a really positive one, not only on a tactical sense, on a technical sense, but also from what he's learned at Man City and what he brings in that kind of mental sort of steel and determination. So, and also another important thing, his English is excellent as well. He's been here. He knows the language. It's just what you said earlier, minimizing that adaptation phase, come straight in, you know, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if he's in our starting lineup for Palace on August the 5th.
No, same, same.
Particularly with Tierney suffering with a couple of knocks, they're not rushing him back. So I think it's really good that they're getting players in early, they're giving him time. You know, he's already in the States. I'm sure he's met everyone already. And I just think it ticks so many boxes. You know, it made sense from the first minute. When I saw this link first being reported, I just said, that makes sense. And there's nothing wrong with making sense.
Exactly. So, you know what? It was one of those where when I saw the link first, I was like, you know what? That's just somebody going, that's the perfect transfer for Arsenal, you know, perfect transfer rumor because of the Arteta thing, because of our need for a left back. You know, I didn't really give it that much credence because it was so almost perfect. You just think like, he's just sat down, done that. But, you know, turns out it's true. And here we are. And yeah, like you, I'm really excited to see what he can do, particularly, you know, at 25 years of age, you've got that bit more responsibility now. You're coming to a club in your prime years who are looking to do better, who are looking to improve and are looking to you to be part of that. I think that's a really interesting thing for a player. Is like, yes, I want to win things, because Gabriel Jesus and Zinchenko are used to winning trophies and medals. They want more of them, but they know that they're key components to this new, if you want to call it a new Arsenal side, and their chances of doing that, which I think it's a really exciting thing.
Yeah, totally. I mean, at the crux of this transfer, they've signed another proven Premier League player whose technical quality, you know, his leadership quality instantly improves this squad. And I think we can help each other, if that makes sense.
Sure.
I think Arsenal can give Zinchenko a chance to improve and become a much more prominent player within the project that he's involved in. But he can also help us on our journey as well. And I think, you know, there are some obviously defensive kinks to consider and to iron out. But I just think it makes sense on so many levels. And I'm really kind of happy in not only how quickly they moved on to Zinchenko, but also at how quickly the transfer has been done, that he's going to be in nice and early, meet his new teammates. And I think particularly with Europe next season, he's just an excellent player to have in and around the squad. And I think left back, left eight, wherever he is, he's a really accomplished technical player that improves us. And that's what you want at the end of the day.
100%. Okay, well, look, as ever, Phil, thank you very much indeed for taking the time to talk about a new signing. Hopefully we've got another one along the way soon. There might be a gap or two still to fill. But for now, we'll leave it there. Phil, cheers.
Thanks so much. I'm feel better.
Thank you.
Go and get some rest.
I'll do my best. I soldiered my way through this. To you guys here on Patreon, as always, thank you so much for being here. Take it easy, and we will catch you on the next one.